Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Back to the Friday Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. Special guest, Adam Jardy, legendary Ohio State basketball writer, who in a previous life covered not only Ohio State basketball, but Ohio State football and Ohio State football recruiting, and he is here because he's one of my best buds, and because he knows as much about the recruitment of Terrell Pryor as anybody out there, and that's what we are here to talk about. It is a Buckeye Fly effect, one that we have planned, Adam. I reached out to you about this like 2 months ago, probably. Is that right?
Yeah. First off, thanks for having me on here, because this is really cool to go back down memory lane like this, and my brain has kind of been racing, I would say, for probably the last 2 months, just thinking of all the different connections to make here and all the different strands we were trying to put together as we were recruiting this. It was recruitment unlike any other.
No, it was bonkers. And that's what we want to talk about. The Buckeye Fly effect is, what if Terrell Pryor had not come to Ohio State? And then that became an even more interesting question this week with Terrell Pryor and the other members of the Tattoo Five, Devere Posey, Mike Adams, Dan Heron, and Solomon Thomas, saying that they would like their records reinstated. And they called for that in a tweet this week that Terrell Pryor put out. And so, Adam, there's been like a renewed conversation about this around name, image, and likeness, around the Tattoo Five, around Reggie Bush, around the Fab Five. I think it's something that's going to continue. We're going to get into that a little bit later, but it's not really the main thrust of what we're going to do here. We do have a tech subscriber poll of whether people think the Tattoo Five record should be reinstated. We have a tech subscriber poll on, are you glad that Terrell Pryor came to Ohio State, or you kind of wish he had gone somewhere else? There's another question. What did you think of, should Jim Tressel in the moment have recruited Terrell Pryor? That was like an overwhelming yes. Like, why wouldn't you recruit Terrell Pryor? It was 88% yes, he's an elite player, you had to try to get him. 10% I don't know, but I generally would trust Tressel. And only 2% said no, it was a risky move that had a chance to end poorly, and you should have stayed away. Adam, that question, it's like, oh, hey, should Ohio State try to recruit the number one player in the country? And it's like, we had a couple of tech subscribers who were like, what are you asking? Like, what do you mean? Do I want my team to get good players? What we're going to get into, Adam, is this was, for me, the most unusual Ohio State recruitment that I covered, and it certainly was different. And I'm just going to say it off the top. We're not saying that it was shady, because we don't know that, but it was definitely different. And there have been circumstances where there are great high school players and a school decides, you know what, like, I can't get a handle on this, we're out,
right?
And then we'll talk about, well, what if he wouldn't have come, what would have happened? There's a very clear what I think would have happened that probably would have been okay for Ohio State football as a competitive team. And then, of course, the complicating factor of all this is Terrell Pryor comes, the Tattoo Five happens, Jim Tressel loses his job, and it leads to Urban Meyer. So I think there are feelings about this that are like, well, Would I want to go back in time and not have Terrell Pryor come and Jim Tressel keeps his job and Urban Meyer never comes?
Right.
Because Tressel losing his job leads to this new era of Ohio State football. So obviously that's a complicating factor. That's not exactly how I want to view it, though, yeah. Right? That, like, you know, in the end, it's a great thing that Terrell Pryor came, and it's not, like, only his fault, but, like, it was a precipitating event to the program exploding.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at the one season of Ohio State football that has not been exemplary, you know, in the last, I mean, you go back to the, I mean, I guess they were 8-4 in 2004, but I mean, since then, the one down season was the year when Terrell just left and went to the supplemental draft and Luke Fickell was the coach. So, you know, it did lead to that one dip that Ohio State has experienced. But the thing that I think about when I try to put my head back in the state of what was it like watching these programs trying to recruit Terrell Pryor, he was the biggest recruit ever at that point. I mean, certainly there have been other recruitments since then that have generated those kinds of headlines and that level of interest. But not only was he a generational type of athlete, but then he delayed his recruitment. Or, you know, yes. his signing day. So he ends up not signing on signing day. The first player of any sort of national renown to do that, which just generated that buzz and that hype even further and even further. And so when you think about if Terrell Pryor had not gone to Ohio State, if he had gone to Penn State, or if he had gone to Michigan and given Rich Rod like a huge jolt, like right off the bat there, I think the loss for Ohio State of losing a recruiting battle like that would have been significant.
So... yes, because there are things here. There's what they don't get, and there's what one of their rivals does get.
Right.
Which you have to take into account.
Right.
Which you have to take into account.
Right.
And so that is a complicating factor. So let's I don't know like how far back to go, but I think one of the primary things, one of the main points about this is that Ohio State recruited Terrell Pryor differently than the other programs,
yes.
Primarily Michigan and Penn State, recruited him.
Right.
And I think they recruited Terrell Pryor differently than they themselves had recruited any other prospect. At least, I don't know how they recruited Maurice Claret, or I don't know how they recruited, you know, Santonio Holmes or any other, like, great players where it's like, hey, maybe that's a little bit of a, you know, Maurice Claret is a super huge prospect and Santonio Holmes is a receiver in Florida. It's like, you know, I'm just, whatever, anybody.
Right.
I don't know how they recruited... and all the specifics of how they recruited Chris Spielman back in the day, you know? So, like, So we can't say that definitively, but in what we experienced, this was different. And we sat down, and one of the reasons we're sitting here is you and I, once Terrell Pryor came to Ohio State, had a conversation about should we be prepared to write a book about this?
Yes.
Because we had an idea that we thought this might be really interesting. And there's two different possibilities how this could go.
Yeah, it was going to be boom or bust. And I think we could feel that very clearly, that either there wasn't anything untoward, or maybe that's not even the right word, but either this was just going to lead to Ohio State winning multiple national championships and he's the greatest player in Ohio State football history, or he leaves the program in tatters in some way and everything kind of blows up.
And we felt that, like, right away.
Yeah.
And that's the thing in asking this question of our tech subscribers. If you'll be a tech subscriber, give it a shot at 614-350-3315, 14-day free trial, $4 a month after that, 614-350-3315. You guys know the number by now. Jardy's like, God, I didn't know I was going to be here to help you sell stuff. By the way, read Adam Jardy in the Columbus Dispatch. He's one of the best college basketball writers in the country. He has his own podcast. We'll get it in here early. Adam, make sure that people know. I mean, listen, people listen to this. They like Ohio State sports. They know who you are and what you do. But let's give a reminder of where they can read you and where they can listen to you.
Well, thank you for that. You can listen to the Buckeye Extra basketball podcast. We do have a football podcast too, but I'm here to tell you to listen to the basketball podcast because that's what pays my salary. But you can also read my stuff on BuckeyeExtra.com, Dispatch.com, and at Adam Jardy on Twitter.
Great stuff. So, back then you were a recruiting writer for Buckeye Sports Bulletin,
yep.
Football writer, basketball writer, everything writer.
Yep.
But you were very, very heavily involved in covering this recruitment. And we just got a sense that it was a little different. And one of the reasons was because the primary contact for Ohio State in this recruitment was not Terrell Pryor's high school coach.
Correct. And honestly, it wasn't even really his family. His dad had a great relationship with the Penn State coaching staff. As I went back through my quote file and started looking about all the things that people had said to me in the like 2 years that we covered this recruitment, his dad was really close with, it was Tom Bradley, I believe was the assistant coach.
Yes.
And Joe Paterno spent a lot of time, like, I mean, that's how he ended up not committing on signing day, was that Penn State made such a strong pitch that you really need to stay in state. You really need to go to Penn State. But Ohio State didn't really go that route. I mean, they were on friendly terms with them, but there were two businessmen in Jeanette, Ted Sarniak and Joseph DeNunzio. DeNunzio ran a restaurant, and I don't remember what Sarniak did.
Glass Factory.
Glass Factory, that's right. Yes.
And I learned more about the Western Pennsylvania glass manufacturing business during the recruitment of Purell Pryor than I ever would have expected.
Which is another sign of just how unusual this all was. I mean, like, that we were spending time on things like that while we're also dealing with covering the recruitment of the top-rated recruit in the history of, like, most of the recruiting rankings at that point. Like, there were so many layers to this as far as what was actually happening. And I have it from multiple people that were part of this recruitment that Ohio State just had a different approach. They sought out these two guys who were close with Terrell for whatever reason, and those were the relationships that Ohio State really invested in.
This was in, so like 2006 and 7, this was happening, because Terrell Pryor is a freshman in 2008. There was a game that like we all were at, I guess, in the fall of 2007.
Yes.
When Ohio State was playing Penn State on the next Friday, and Jeanette had a home game on a Friday. The next Saturday, Jeanette had a home game on a Friday night, and like the whole beat, at least you and I and a couple other people, I think Tim May was there,
yep,
stopped and watched this high school game, and that was the night that Jim Tressel, Daryl Hazel, Joe Daniels, Thad Matta,
and Alan Major, he was the other coach.
So that's three football coaches and two basketball coaches show up at Terrell Pryor's high school game.
Yes.
And it was like, we were all going to be there anyway. He looked like an NFL player playing against middle school guys. Like, it is unbelievable.
Yes.
And the whole Ohio State coaching staff is there. And it's like just a reminder of like, this is not normal.
My enduring memory from that was I somehow managed to sneak my way into like, this was like a high school stadium, but it had a press box that had like a few suites, like four maybe. And I managed to get in the press box where the coaches were for Ohio State. Daryl Hazel spotted me and he knew me and he kept me from Tressel. Like, he very clearly was like playing defense, like just talking to me about anything he could think of so that I wouldn't like get near Tressel and hear Tressel saying things about him. Like, very much, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
But I will never forget. And when I went back and reread what I wrote on that game, he had like an 88-yard run where he like took it around the end, spun off a guy and just took it to the, you know, made it to the edge and was gone. And I remember sitting there. And Thad, at this point, I'm trying to remember if he had had his foot surgery or not, or his back surgery, excuse me. But he was. I remember Thad was sitting in a chair at the front, and I just remember Thad just going, "Oh, that's not fair. Oh, that's not fair. That is not fair." As he's just like motoring down the sideline, and nobody can touch him. And it was a almost out of body experience to be watching this guy who is just this universally renowned recruit in the same room with a bunch of college coaches.
Yeah. Yeah, we all knew it.
Yes. Yeah, it was immediately evident. That was actually the third time that I saw Terrell. So I had gotten some wrong intel. I watched Pryor the week before because I thought that was when all the coaches were going to be there.
Oh.
So I drove to Jeanette. It ended up being senior night, so that was useful. They just beat the heck out of some completely overmatched team. But I remember in that game, there was a moment where Terrell took, again, like a 60-yard touchdown run. And as he's running to the end zone, I saw him like point behind him. Like, he kind of almost turned around and pointed back where he had just run from. And I thought, I don't know what he was pointing at. So I asked him. This was one of the very few times I got a one-on-one. Because nobody went to see Jeanette play, you know, directional school from the region.
Right.
That lost like 80 to nothing. And I asked him about it. I said, what were you pointing at? Maybe someone had an angle that he thought, and he's pointing at a blocker. He said, no, I was waving by. And I was like, oh, this is a little bit different. But then I also saw there was like a utility shed near the stadium that as Terrell was leaving, there were like grown men like waiting there to try to get like autographs and stuff. And I remember watching his coach, Ray Ritz, try to like kind of monitor that while also like, I mean, I talked to him and I talked to Terrell, but I remember watching that and thinking like, we're in like Western Pennsylvania, this game meant nothing to anybody, but there was a line of probably 20 people who were significantly older than me there to get his, to get Terrell's autograph. And I remember filing that away for maybe the book or whatever.
Yeah. Again, we talked about the book. You're over here, as people who listen to this podcast know, I said, I'm not much for the facts. And you were like, well, I have a Word file of 27,000 words of everything anyone ever said about Terrell Pryor. And that was kind of like, maybe we should do the book? Like, so, but like the thing that makes it hard about this, and I don't, listen, you can't just say whatever you want on a podcast and be like, ah, it's just a podcast. We're telling you like what we experienced firsthand.
Right.
We don't know how anything went down, but we're telling you how we covered this and what our feelings were about the situation. And then we're going to talk about like, what if he hadn't come here? What would have happened to Ohio State? All these things. What should happen now with the Tattoo Five? But it was just unlike anything else. And I know people listening to this, you said the name Ted Sarniak. Ted Sarniak is a name that became very well known,
yes,
to all Ohio State fans during the Tattoo Five situation, because that is the person that Jim Tressel emailed and informed Ted Sarniak about what was happening with Terrell at the time when Jim Tressel, according to the NCAA, like wasn't telling Gene Smith, wasn't telling anybody else, was trying to solve this with Ted Sarniak. And I can't remember exactly how it came out. I don't know if it was that we knew Tressel told somebody and we didn't yet know who it was. And you and we, not just us, but we were like, well, we know who that is.
Right.
And we knew it was going to be Ted Sarniak, because right, Ted Sarniak, having covered the recruitment from the start, we knew what that meant. And so when it all came back around to Ted Sarniak, who has died and has passed on,
right,
as unfortunately has Terrell Pryor's father, that did not surprise us.
Yes, yes. Ted Sarniak somewhat threatened me at one point, where I had written as the recruitment was still going on, Ohio State had been in town for like an in-person visit, and they spent time not with the coaching staff, but with Ted Sarniak. And I wrote that in a story, and the outcry among Ohio State fans that thought I was trying, because there were the ether, the insinuation, the whatever you want to call it, about if you mentioned Ted Sarniak, it had to be because you were implying that there was something untoward going on. And so by me saying that Ohio State was meeting with Ted Sarniak, which they were, and they did, and I knew that on very good authority, I had a lot of Ohio State fans that said I was trying to take the program down because I was saying that they were doing something untoward, which wasn't what I was saying. I was saying they were meeting with him because yes, they were. And then I eventually heard through the grapevine that he was on a visit. I think I might have been to a spring game with Terrell. Like the whole yes, Brew crew was there. Everybody was there. And Ted Sarniak came with Terrell. And I can't remember if Terrell had committed yet or not. But somehow word got to me that Ted Sarniak knew that I was there, and he wanted me at the bottom of the Olentangy because I had publicly connected him to Ohio State.
That was the thing I was wondering if you were going to say on the podcast or not, because I know that story, and now everybody else knows that story too. And I can remember Ted Sarniak sitting. So that would have been, I guess, like the spring game, like before. Well, I guess Terrell had, because Terrell ended up committing. He did not commit in February on signing day, but I remember he committed in March during the NCAA basketball tournament because I was in Washington. It was the year that Ohio State did not make the NCAA tournament. They were in the NIT.
That's
and
right.
So I just went to the closest NCAA tournament site, and I was covering like Marquette, NC State in Washington, D.C. And it was like, oh, Terrell Pryor's committing. And I was like, why am I here? So I remember getting on the they had a conference call with Jim Tressel because Jim Tressel could finally talk about it.
Yes.
So then by the spring game, Terrell Pryor had committed, but Ted Sarniak was there with him. He's
yes,
like a blonde-haired guy. He was sitting in the stands, and it was like, that's him.
I think there's pictures.
I think there
I'm
are
sure
pictures.
I'm sure somewhere there are pictures.
And so I man, there's like a lot of things in here. I don't know. I guess people think this is interesting. This is pretty behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And we have written various parts of this over the years, but I think this is new to some people. And we are not the only people who covered this. And we are not the only people, certainly, who understand how they recruited and had a connection with Ted Sarniak. But I do feel like we understand it as well as anybody.
I
am not a recruiting expert anymore. You, I think, covered this recruitment as well as anybody, and it is the recruitment that I covered more than any recruitment I've covered.
Well, yeah, and that's another thing about all this is, like I kind of said at the top, that there was such interest in this recruitment that when you talk about what if Ohio State had not gotten Terrell Pryor, I mean, yes, things were going well for Ohio State at that point, but like the loss of that recruiting battle would have been significant.
Yes.
Because, like you said, there were so many people that were covering this that had never written about recruiting. I mean, I remember us carpooling to go to Terrell Pryor's non-announcement on signing day, driving, getting out of there, getting all the stuff we needed, and then hightailing it back to Columbus and sliding into Tressel's press conference like 5 minutes in. And I remember like other reporters here in town making fun of us for doing that, because why would you care that much about covering recruiting when you're supposed to be like a beat writer? It was like, because this is the biggest thing that's happened in Ohio State football recruiting ever to this point.
And we were in that big gym in Jeanette. Yep. I remember Pete Thamel, who then was with the New York Times, was there. Yep. It's like national people were there.
Yes.
And we did not know that he was going to announce that he wasn't announcing.
We started to get an inkling. I remember getting a hold of Ray Ritz. This is pre-texting. I mean, we were paying like by the text. And I remember managing to get a hold of him on my cell phone, like as we were driving there, like, hey, we're an hour out. Like, is this happening? And he was like, no, I don't think he's announcing today, but there's still going to be a press conference. And it's like, do we turn around? Do we go? It's like, well, we're this far.
Yeah.
Let's go there and get what we can get. If there's going to be a press conference.
And we definitely, we wrote non-announcement stories.
Yes.
Like you set the scene. There's all these TV cameras there.
Yes.
And then he announces he's not announcing.
Yeah.
So it was worth it. And then you talk to people. I mean, I think we all, you know.
Charlie Batch was there.
Batch, former NFL backup quarterback who was a mentor to Terrell Pryor, was very involved with the process. It is quite a cast of characters. So Ray Ritz is the high school head coach.
Right.
And so this is 2007, 2008. Right. I had started on the beat in 2005. I had previously covered baseball on the Philadelphia Phillies beat. And one of the other beat writers that I was friends with who also covered the Phillies happened to be from Jeanette, Pennsylvania.
I don't know if I knew that.
So I was like still in contact with him. And then this stuff was starting to happen. And he's just like a really good reporter and is a kind of guy who's just connected. So he was like tipping me off on some stuff because he knew enough of what was going on in Jeanette that I got a lay of the land of Jeanette from him. And I was told early on that Ray Ritz, the head coach, really wasn't the coach on the staff that was in the know about Terrell.
Right.
Now, Ray was very accommodating. I know you had a really good relationship with Ray. I talked with Ray. Everybody talked with Ray. But I remember my friend telling me there's this guy who's an assistant who has a weight room in his garage.
Yep.
And that's where the guys work out. And that guy was Roy Hall, who is the uncle of Jordan Hall.
Right.
Who came to Ohio State in the class before Terrell.
The
class after Terrell. Sorry, yes. Class of 2009. But I think he committed before Terrell committed.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And so he turned out to be a good player.
He was a good player. Good.
He was an Ohio State level player.
Good kick returner.
But it was another thing. It's like, they're sending 3 football coaches and 2 basketball coaches to his game. They're offering his teammate, who's the nephew of the coach that he trusts the most, before he commits.
Yep.
They know D'Annunzio. They know Sarniak. Ohio State had every aspect of this recruitment blanketed.
And Joe Daniels needs some credit for that, because he obviously had ties to the region. This was an area that he had recruited heavily throughout his entire career. And the late Ohio State quarterbacks coach, who was as I go through my quote file, I mean, just beloved. I mean, there was a real strong relationship there, and he had a lot to do with that too.
Had coached at Pitt, had coached Dan Marino at Pitt.
Yep.
Was from Western Pennsylvania originally.
Right.
He makes a brief little appearance, and I'll plug my book here for a moment since we're doing a whole recruiting podcast. I have a book, you guys know, coming out September 14th. It's recruiting stories, 17 recruiting stories from Ohio State. Terrell Pryor is not one of them.
Yeah.
And the reason Terrell Pryor is not one of them, and the reason that we have not written a book, is because I don't trust myself to really have a handle on what is actually true
right.
and what actually happened here.
Right.
But in there, coincidentally, Tom Skladany, the greatest punter in Ohio State history who played for Woody, was from Western Pennsylvania, and Tom Skladany saved all his recruiting letters that he got in high school. And one of his letters that he got was from like a 31-year-old Boston College assistant who was like, hey, I went to the same high school as you. We would love to have you. And it was Joe Daniels.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I sent a note to Joe's son, Matt, who I don't think he saw it, but like, and said, hey, like I came across a letter from your dad today, because Joe Daniels is one of the great guys that you ever wanted to meet.
Yeah.
And Terrell clearly had a connection with Joe Daniels that, you know, we can talk about Ted Sarniak, we can talk about Roy Hall, we can talk about recruiting Jordan Hall. There was something about Joe Daniels as a veteran Western Pennsylvania quarterback guru that Terrell Pryor said to himself, like, I want to go play for that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he trusted him more than he trusted Rich Rodriguez, who was also a quarterback guy, right?
Right.
I mean, like, that was part of the deal. Like, Terrell Pryor, come to Michigan and be the perfect dual option guy for the new Michigan spread offense that Rich Rodriguez is the best person in the world to run. Like, there was a lot in that sales pitch right there. And we've talked about the Penn State connections and how big that was. But, like, that was such a huge part to me in all this as well, was that not only could they have lost him, but had he gone to Michigan, like, that could have been something that might have flipped the rivalry a little bit.
Let's take a quick break. You said beforehand we might go 4 hours. I was like, we're not going to go 4 hours. I was like, no, I think we might go 4 hours. We'll be back with Adam Jardy on Buckeye Talk. All right, back with Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Like, I was thinking about this, Adam. It's like you just asked off camera, off mic, are you getting me off topic? It's like the cast of... It's like it has to be a book. It's like you're trying to explain like the people involved in this.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the Joe Daniels stuff a little bit. It's like he comes to play for Joe Daniels, who at that point is already diagnosed with cancer.
Right.
And then his cancer takes a turn for the worse, and Terrell doesn't really get to play for Joe Daniels, which has a direct effect on Terrell Pryor's development as a quarterback, but I think has an effect on what he did off the field, because he did not have Joe Daniels in his room.
Right, right.
But at that point, Terrell did not want to be Rich Rodriguez's perfect dual threat running next Pat White kind of quarterback. Terrell Pryor wanted to be an NFL quarterback.
Right.
Terrell Pryor wanted to be Dan Marino. He didn't want to be Pat White.
Right.
He already knew he was Pat White. He knew he could run over people and around people and past people. He wanted to be developed as an overall quarterback. And then he gets here and he winds up working with Nick Siciliano. And this is no offense to Nick Siciliano. He never should have that job. He was
correct.
Unqualified. He never coached again in college.
Right.
And he wound up being in charge of Terrell Pryor, and he was not ready for the job. And Jim Tressel played quarterback in college. Jim Tressel knows quarterbacks. But when you're the head coach, you can't be the quarterback's coach. You're not. You're not in the room every day. And instead of having a veteran coach that recruited him, that he trusted in Joe Daniels as his guiding light on campus, he had a guy who was overmatched.
Yeah.
And I don't think was able to guide Terrell very much at all.
Yeah, that becomes, as more time has passed and I've thought back on this era, that becomes the most shocking thing to me, that became like the permanent solution. That wasn't just Joe is sick, because at first they had to get an exemption for Nick because Joe was sick, but he was still going to try to be around whenever he could. And that was for Joe's best interest. Like, he didn't want to just lay around and be sick. He wanted to, if he felt well enough, he wanted to go to practice. He wanted to be around the team. And so that they had to get the exemption so that Nick could be the guy when Joe couldn't be there. But then why that became the permanent solution is still kind of shocking when you look at it in hindsight. Because as you said, Jim Tressel knows quarterbacks, or at least he played quarterback. And to think that they didn't bring in an established quarterbacks coach. I mean, they could have said, hey, Terrell, we know that Nick is whatever, but we're going to go out and bring in a new quarterbacks coach. Help us pick a new quarterbacks coach.
Yep.
Who would you feel comfortable with? We'll bring it. We're Ohio State. What coach isn't going to want to work with you at Ohio State and help us win a national championship? They could have gone out and probably gotten anybody.
And I'm just going to say, that's why I'm a little worried about Corey Dennis. That's all. And I'm not going to apologize for that. Again, you guys know, you've heard me say it before. I'm not trying to beat a dead horse, but it makes me a little nervous when I feel like you have what I consider to be, I don't know if I want to say unqualified, but underqualified.
Underqualified, yeah.
quarterbacks coach when you have a great quarterback in your hands. And yes. So Corey Dennis recruited Quinn Ewers. He has that relationship. Nick Siciliano did not have that existing relationship with Terrell Pryor. And Nick really was overmatched in a way that's even beyond Corey's inexperience. So it's not fair to compare Corey Dennis to Nick Siciliano. But once that happened, they got – I mean, Braxton is in his own way an incredible, incredible talent. They have had great talent here. Justin Fields is a better quarterback prospect than Terrell Pryor was. But Terrell is just such a rare athlete, and then that's how they coached him. It's like malfeasance, and it's not their fault exactly, because it's so tragic what happened with Joe Daniels.
Yeah.
But as you said, once it happened and they allowed a temporary solution to become a permanent solution, that is Jim Tressel's loyalty getting in the way of what's best for the program.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely right.
So I feel like we just have to like run through the characters. I want to go back to Ted Sarniak a little bit. My friend, who knew what was up in Jeanette, told me that there was this guy who would pick Terrell Pryor up from school every day. And so one of the days I was there in Jeanette again to do a story. I don't know how many times I was in Jeanette. It was multiple. And I went past the high school, and I saw Terrell Pryor getting in a car after school with this guy, who turns out to be Ted Sarniak.
I remember this.
So I was like, wow, it was like just fortuitous. And I was sort of like, well, I wonder where they're going. So I did follow them a little bit. I stopped myself then. It was really weird. It's not one of my proudest moments. But I wound up then going to the glass factory where Ted Sarniak was like the owner. And I said, I'm here to see Ted Sarniak. And like someone said, oh, like he's like not here or something. And I was like, well, I just saw him. And they were like, well, wait here, wait in the lobby. And like the car that I had seen pick up Terrell that I knew was Ted Sarniak was in the parking lot. And they were like, well, he's not here. Let me check or whatever. And then like they sat me in the lobby. And then like 20 minutes later, they came back and like, yeah, he's not here. And then I went out the parking lot and the car was gone. So like I tried to talk to Ted and I just was there to do a feature story on Terrell. And I was like, I want to talk to the people who are important in Terrell's life.
Right.
Again, I was not going in with – and listen, this is the thing about this. I know, again, we're not saying this is shady, and then we're saying things that I'm sure people are getting the impression that we think it's shady. This is what happens in recruiting. And if you have in your 27,000-word file a quote from Joe Daniels, and this is how recruiting works, and this is what every coach in the history of recruiting says about everything. You have to figure out who the decision maker is.
Correct.
Often it's mom and dad. It's not always mom and dad.
Right.
Sometimes it's the high school coach. Sometimes it's an AAU coach. Sometimes it's an uncle or a grandparent or a friend. In this situation, Ted Sarniak was a benefactor of Terrell Pryor.
Right.
And I say that in a way, he was a big guy in town.
Yeah, he was the dude.
And he had interest in this great young person who was from a difficult background.
Right.
Succeeding.
Right.
And I do think Ted Sarniak had a legitimate, true interest in Terrell Pryor succeeding. And you are allowed to help someone. It's a pre-existing relationship.
Right.
It is not – Ted Sarniak, like, helping out Terrell Pryor is not shady. But then when it's like, well, I just want to go talk to him for a feature story about Terrell, and it's like he sneaks out the back door, and then you're like, what's up here?
Right.
Right. That's the thing. And all we're saying again, we knew he was important to Terrell. And when we tried to report on that, people ran from it.
Well, and there's, if you go back and you read all the coverage, I just did a quick Google search. I mean, there's stories about when Ted Sarniak passed away. Ted Sarniak, to my knowledge, has never been quoted by anybody. He's never done a single interview. So his involvement, at least like from his side, like his side of the story was never told.
Right.
Despite having every opportunity in the world for it to be told. It was not for a lack of trying. It's not that people didn't want to get Ted Sarniak involved. It's not that people didn't know that Ted Sarniak was involved. He never spoke to anybody about anything.
And that's his right.
Right, exactly, yes.
But then it comes back around and Ted Sarniak's name is involved in the situation that leads to Jim Tressel's departure from Ohio State.
Yes.
And that's the guy. And it just reinforced this was an Ohio State to Sarniak connection that was very important in getting Terrell Pryor here. And as we've said again, and I guess we can get off Ted Sarniak, nobody else had that. And
correct.
That is to Ohio State's credit.
They figured it out.
They found the decision maker and they established a relationship.
And that helped them. I know I've been talking about Michigan on here, but like his dad wanted him to go to Penn State, like really wanted him to go to Penn State. And his dad was basically in a wheelchair.
Yes.
And his dad, you know, had a condition. I have to look it back up. I'm blanking off the top of my head what it was, but like his body was breaking down.
Yes.
And the dad would have really liked him to go to Penn State. I think it was a little bit closer. And that did not win out over Ohio State's recruitment. Which
correct.
Tells you that, again, they found the right people that they needed to find that held the ultimate sway in the decision-making process.
And when you looked at it, Penn State was the home state school
yep.
that the dad liked. Rich Rod was seemingly the ideal coach to coach Terrell Pryor.
Yep.
That kind of thing, the perfect offense. Ohio State wasn't perfect anything.
Yeah.
Now, they were coming off. They were at that moment, as they were recruiting him heavy in the fall of 2007, they're in the midst of a season that's going to lead them to their second straight national championship game.
Right.
But it's really not a recruitment that Ohio State necessarily should have won, because at that point, now it feels like any recruitment like that, I mean, if Ohio State's recruiting against Michigan and Penn State, and that's who Ohio State's recruiting against, whether the player is from Georgia or Pennsylvania or Michigan or Ohio or California, you think Ohio State should win.
Yes.
But at that time,
it
was not like that.
Correct. Yeah, this was a different era. I mean, and you look at that recruiting class and all the players that came out of that, the five-star guys and the Brew Crew, and I mean, how significant the impact of that recruiting class was in Ohio State. It was already a great recruiting class, possibly, I don't want to say unparalleled, but one of the best recruiting classes Ohio State had ever assembled to that point. And then you added Terrell Pryor on top of that.
So in that moment, you know, Jim Tressel in 2006, Ohio State makes the national title game with guys like Troy Smith and James Laurinaitis and Malcolm Jenkins and players who are good players but are not five-star.
Yeah.
Top 20 in the nation type of players. And then in 2007, they're playing Todd Beckman, who was like a red shirt and a gray shirt and was 40 years old. But his quarter is in the process of quarterbacking Ohio State to a season. And by the way, that Friday night, we all go watch Terrell Pryor play high school football in Gannett, Pennsylvania. On Saturday, we go to State College and Todd Beckman rips up
Penn State. Best game of his career.
Best game of his career.
Yep.
And now it makes me think like, oh, did he know all this? All the Ohio State writers at Terrell's game. I'll show them. And so, because then when Terrell Pryor gets here, he steals Todd Beckman's job. And like we talk about now, it's like, oh, you know, Trevor Lawrence in 2018, Kelly Bryant had taken Clemson to the playoff the year before. And then Trevor Lawrence, like, that happened in 2008.
Yeah.
That a quarterback who the year before had taken his team to the national title game got benched for a true freshman. It happened with Mr. Conservative Jim Tressel, who, after watching the 35-3 loss at USC, was like, I've seen enough.
What a garbage game plan for that game, by the way. I will just throw that out there. I remember I didn't make that trip. I didn't travel very much for the road games at that point. But when the game plan was, and I remember talking to some of the people around Terrell and around Todd after that game when they made the switch, and it was, what a garbage game plan. Like, all right, we're going to bring Todd in, and he's only going to throw the ball. So
yes.
USC's just going to, you know, pin their ears back and blitz the crap out of him. And then bring Terrell in, he's only going to run.
Yes.
And so we're just going to, you know, rush a bunch of guys. And he's not going to be able. It was a horrible game plan.
Beanie was hurt.
Which
threw everything off. And I remember being at the Coliseum for that game and us walking down the ramp like they were there for the walkthrough. And just all of us trying to figure out, like, is Beanie going to play or not? How does Beanie look? Is he limping? Like, what does he look like? And I think we, at the moment, still thought he might play. And he winds up not playing. They have an injury in the offensive line. In that game, I know something happened. I think maybe a tackle got hurt and Jim Cordell had to switch from like center to left tackle or something. But the offensive line took a hit in a way that it was like, well, we just need a more mobile quarterback. But also they just wanted to make the switch.
Yes.
And I can remember, listen, I never know what it's like. Again, you can't just say whatever you want on podcasts. But I remember walking with Tressel after he made the announcement that they were switching from Beckman to Pryor and just being like, is there something that we don't know that is affecting this decision? Just so like I know, whatever. And he was basically like, did you watch the game? You know, like, we've got to play this guy. And it was like, there was no, you know, whatever. It was like, they just, we recruited our butts off to get this guy. We're going to, so then, and then that game, they got blown out by USC 33-5. They were coming off two straight national championship games. All those seniors had come back. James Laurinaitis, yep. Malcolm Jenkins, Marcus Freeman, Alex Boone, Brian Robisky had come back to make a third run.
Yep.
And the third run is blown up in week three.
Yep.
And they come back and they are playing Troy in week four. And it is the starting debut of Terrell Pryor. And it is the emptiest I've ever seen Ohio Stadium.
Oh, yeah. It was completely dead. Because also the narrative at that point was that Ohio State kept getting blown out in these big games.
Yes. So this was like a transformation. And I think part of it here, Adam, I think over time, I'm not even sure what this podcast is about anymore. I think this is really interesting. I hope people think this is interesting. This is kind of like guys sitting around the bar just telling old stories. I think there was very much an idea that like, oh, they can't get over the top. They just need to push it more on recruiting national talent.
Yes.
Now, they were doing that during 2007 while they didn't know that they weren't going to get over the top, right? So it's like, was it just the remnants of like what Jarvis Moss and Derrick Henry did to them? And like, listen, like, in the 2006 national title game, and like, we've got to get more dudes. Percy right. Harvin, like, we don't have any guys like that.
Right.
We need to get some guys like that. So that's the class they get. Mike Adams and Jake Stoneburner and Mike Brewster and J.B. Shugarts and Terrell Pryor and Devere Posey, and they raise the talent level. They go all over the country. They get dynamic guys. And I think the narrative, and I hate the word narrative, I think what people have thought over the years, and we've written, I know I've written and I've said it, is sort of like, I always felt like Terrell, Jim Tressel, and I wasn't here to cover it, but when you get somewhere new, you extend yourself on what you're trying to do. So the Maurice Clarett, getting Maurice Clarett to Ohio State, it's a complicated situation. Maurice is kind of a complicated individual. It becomes a complicated situation, but he led Ohio State to a national championship as a freshman.
Right.
Like, it's worth it.
Yeah.
And Jim Tressel, you just got here. You've got to win. And like, whatever you do, like, you've got to, you can't just, you've maybe got to take a quote risk, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And then I always sort of felt like they were winning. They didn't get over the top. And then it was like, listen, maybe there are times when we wouldn't recruit Terrell Pryor, but like, we think we can get this guy. He's in a neighboring state. He's in our 300-mile radius and we can't keep doing what we're doing.
Right.
We've got to extend ourselves. And so if there was risk to this, any risk in like, it's not a typical recruitment, maybe there's, it's a complicated recruitment. The situation where the program was, they were good but not good enough, and maybe that led them to push themselves out of their comfort zone more than they would have a couple years earlier. Do you think that's true?
I think that's true, yeah. And I think it's we have to remember, too, like what the state of football was at that point, where like, yes, Terrell wanted to come in and be a passer, and he wanted to be an NFL quarterback, but he was a dual threat.
Yes.
And Ohio State had just seen what a Troy Smith could do as a dual threat. And that was where the game was heading. And the thought, I mean, we saw it when they flipped the switch from USC to Troy, that can Ohio State reasonably compete for a national championship with a pocket passer?
Right.
And just that you needed to find a way to take that next step at the that most important position. And it, oh yeah, this guy happens to be 2.5 hours away and in a neighboring state. Like, we have to put all our efforts into getting this guy. We need to take that step as a program.
So in the end, I mean, they did get him. And I do think he had, I think Terrell had a good relationship with Joe Daniels. I think he had a good relationship with Jim Tressel.
Yep.
I think he did trust those people. He said the thing that like, whatever, to paraphrase, like that State College was too country for him.
Yep.
And like, he wanted to go to a bigger city.
Yep.
And that was a draw for him in Columbus. And I think we all got some mileage out of that. Like, hey, you know, like, Columbus is a pretty big college town, especially compared to everybody else in the Big Ten. And in the end, even though it wasn't maybe as obvious as Penn State, the home state, Rich Rodriguez and that offense, it did in the end fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so there certainly was the possibility, Adam, of like, man, they might win two national titles with this guy.
Oh, absolutely. Because he kind of put them over the top. Like I said, the recruiting class, you just rifled through some of those names. I mean, that's a lot of talent. And when you're that talented and then you have like that one difference maker, like what Terrell showed the potential to be and at times was, that's what could push you over. That's what could get you over the top. And it was interesting to watch him kind of develop and going back and looking through just all the different stuff I have compiled on him. Then as we, you know, chronicled everything in his Ohio State career, there were some pitfalls there as well. And you know, we mentioned maybe the lack of development with Nick Siciliano, but I had totally forgotten about the quote from Devere Posey where he was talking about Terrell's development. And I forget what loss this was after, but he said things will get better for him because it can't get worse. He can't get worse. And I had totally forgotten about that until I was doing my research to prepare for this. And I just, it reminded me that for the highs that they had, you know, winning a Rose Bowl, winning a Sugar Bowl, that whatever, they don't want to recognize it, but we saw it happen. It was an unbelievable game. There were some tough moments, even as he was taking some of those steps forward.
Yeah, there really were some tough moments. And in the end, so they have, so 2008 is a little bit of a wash then.
Yes.
Right? That, I mean, once you lose to USC, they lose to Penn State at home that year.
He fumbles the ball, 4th and 1. He's just, they call a QB sneak. And what was it, like 13-7 or something? Yeah. It was a really low scoring game because he still hadn't quite figured out this, you know, the passing game. And, you know, it's 4th and 1. They just need to pick it up. And they call a QB sneak and he tries to bounce it outside because he thinks he can take it to the house. And he fumbles.
Right.
And they lose. Most bizarre press conference I've ever seen after that game, where he was so devastated by that, that we're in the interview room there and they've brought out all these different players. And then Shelley Poe, the SID for the football program at the time, she tells us that they're going to bring Terrell out. So they bring Terrell out and they sit him up at the podium, and Nick Siciliano is on one side and Shelley's on the other. And they're both like rubbing his back and like, it's not your fault, Terrell. It's not your fault. And he's like taking all the blame, just crushed by this loss. And I remember like just thinking, that is, I get being upset, but that was very strange.
It really, let's run through this real quick. Let's run through Terrell Pryor's career. And I want to go back to that news conference because there's a bigger point here, I think, that you are leading us right into. So they have that loss to Penn State. They come back the next year in 2009. They lose just like a weird game to USC at home. 18-15, Matt Barkley is a true freshman for USC. Like, yep. They probably should have won that game. It just was clunky. But they are definitely a national title contender. They're number 8 going into that game. USC's number 3. They lose, they drop into the teens, and then they're back up to number 7 by the time they go to Purdue. And I can remember me and my list of things that I predicted correctly. The week before, they beat Wisconsin 31-13, and I predicted them to lose that game to Wisconsin because I thought something was wrong.
Yeah.
I thought they were overconfident. I thought they were sort of off. And then they go to Purdue and they lose to Ryan Kerrigan. And so they wind up that season winning in the Rose Bowl, the Jake Ballard catch. It's like a really good season. Jim Tressel gets to go to the Rose Bowl. But if they had beaten Purdue, they would have remained in the mix for a national title game. And then the next year, they get to number 1. They go to Wisconsin. Wisconsin runs the opening kickoff back. The stadium shakes. It feels like an earthquake. And Wisconsin beats them. They're number 1 for a week. And then that's it.
Yep.
And so there are these losses that they had the ability. They were a national championship level team, I think, in 2009 and 2010.
Yes, certainly. Certainly. It's funny because I covered that game at Wisconsin. That was like the only time I flew for a road game. I remember because it was too far to drive. And I was the only person for us that they sent me to that game. And I remember walking because you had to walk like half a mile to where we park, which nobody cares about the pitfalls of covering a game in the media. But I just remember walking back with a couple other reporters because it was dark. I don't know where I was going. And the very real feeling that has this era failed? I remember feeling that because that was a game they needed to win. Because once they lost that, it was like, well, they're not playing for the national championship this year. Like, that just knocked them out of the conversation because they needed to win that game. And they were never in it. And there was a real sense to me leaving the stadium that night thinking, okay, yes, they won the Rose Bowl. Yes, they've had some great moments. And yes, like you take the cachet that comes with landing a recruiting class like they did. But if they don't win a championship, then what was it for? And I remember feeling very like there was a real feeling of defeat at that point.
Because that's their only loss that year.
Yep.
And then by Christmas of that year, we are at the beginning of Tattoo Gate. And so, you know, that's the opportunity lost, that whatever they were striving for, like they almost got there. But the whole point was, well, they were already almost there.
Right.
Like, they were almost there in 06 and 07.
Yep.
And they didn't quite have the talent maybe to get over the top in the moment. And then in 9 and 10, they lose the game in the middle of the year.
Yep.
Just like Ohio State did in 17 and 18 when you lose the game in the middle of the year. And that's what stops you, the loss that you didn't see coming.
Yeah.
So I do think, like, from a talent standpoint, you know, he wasn't a perfect quarterback. He should have been developed better.
Right.
He had a rare package of skills. I mean, he went to the NFL and won games as a quarterback, and then he went to the NFL and was a 1,000-yard guy as a receiver. Yeah. I mean, the ability to do that, he is – I mean, he's like a Bo Jackson light a little bit to me of, like, yeah, he's so talented, but he kind of got pulled, like, well, what if he had just been a receiver earlier his whole life? He might have been an all-pro receiver for 10 years in the NFL.
Sure.
What if he had just stuck at quarterback and never had that and been developed the right way? He could have been Cam Newton, you know, like it's really unfortunate. And I want to take us back to that news conference because it is the one that stands out to everybody. He's whatever, 18 or 19 years old. He feels like the weight of the world is on him. He feels like he has lost this game. He cares. He really cares.
Yes,
he really cares.
That was very evident.
He really cares. And then the next year they go to Penn State and like all the Penn State fans have like T-shirts with crying Terrell and stuff on it because Penn State fans are mad that he left Pennsylvania to come to Ohio State. This is where I think the world failed Terrell Pryor. I think the NCAA structure failed Terrell Pryor. And the idea that that guy, as a teenager, who needs his quarterback's coach and his sports information director to, like, rub his back. Not that he needs it, but that they were. To process a loss. And then, like, in the next year or two, is going to get involved with things off the field that will lead to the end of his career, the end of his head coach's career, a bunch of his friends getting suspended. And they're all suspended, but, I mean, Terrell's the point of this.
Yeah.
And he came from a tough background, from a tough family situation, supreme talent that I don't know ever got the guidance that he deserved.
Yeah.
And was thrown in. Was thrown to the wolves in a lot of ways. And you and I are among the wolves. It's like, hey, man, we got to have a press conference with this quarterback. Now, I'm not going to apologize for us wanting a press conference with the quarterback who fumbled. Right. I mean, it's college football. It's Ohio State. That's part of the deal.
Right.
But, you know, there are so many different ways it could have gone. If it's name, image, and likeness, and he can just make money off the field and set himself up to have a better situation right now.
Yep.
That's going to ease a lot of things in his life. If he has a Joe Daniels with him, if he's just – a lot of things could have changed around him that he had no control over that would have helped him have a better chance at success, which, going back to Ted Sarniak, is what someone like Ted Sarniak wants.
Yep.
They want Terrell Pryor to succeed. And in the end, listen, the guy is an all-time great player at Ohio State. He made the NFL. He made some money at a 1,000-yard receiver year in the NFL. But he certainly did not succeed to the point that he could have, given what kind of athlete and what kind of player he was.
I've long thought that whatever sport it is, it's always interesting. It's been fascinating to me as the more I've gone through this field, and you start to understand, like, what is an off season like, and how limited some of the communications are. And maybe I'm just speaking more basketball at this moment because obviously that's what I do. But I've been amazed, as time has gone on, that things are structured in a way that you can't give kids who often come from situations where they need all the structure and guidance that they can get, and you have to be hands off.
Right.
And I think about some rules have changed over the years, and would name, image, and likeness have helped Terrell Pryor? I think without a doubt. But I just think the fact that the NCAA is not set up to provide the optimum level of guidance to kids who need it. Who are looking to their coaches as their father figure, as whatever, there shouldn't be limits on that kind of stuff. And I think that if that was the case when Terrell was at Ohio State, then yes, this all very well could have ended very differently because he could have just been in touch with whoever he needed to, whenever he needed to, instead of there being limits on things like that in the offseason.
And listen, I think Ray Ritz, I think Roy Hall, I think Ted Sarniak, I think Terrell's family, I think Joe Daniels, I think Nick Siciliano, I think Jim Tressel. All those people wanted Terrell to succeed.
Yeah, Charlie Batch.
All those people were invested in Terrell Pryor, and yet they couldn't make it happen.
Yes.
We still wound up where we were. Now,
Is there personal responsibility for Terrell Pryor and all those players? Yes, of course there is. Are they 19 and 20 years old as they're doing these things? Yes. Like, are they doing it in a world where they are, their school is making gazillions of dollars and they can't get any of it? Yes, it is a they are not blameless. And a lot of this discussion as it relates to now with the Tattoo Five and should their records be reinstated, there is some percentage of Ohio State fans, the texters that I've heard comments from, that are like, listen, they broke the rules. I don't feel bad for them. Like, I'm still ticked.
Yeah, yeah.
And I understand that. But I also think along the way, at least I have, maybe it's just because I'm older, but I do think the way we view college sports has changed a little bit. Man, they were really young. It's really high profile.
Yep.
It's really high pressure. And in a lot of ways, the system still doesn't allow for the financial and other support that they probably deserve because they are teenagers with a giant bullseye on them.
And especially when we're talking about a player like Terrell Pryor, who, how many athletes before Terrell Pryor and after Terrell Pryor have come to Ohio State and have been in that spotlight and have had to navigate that and deal with that? But think of what he had to bring with him to Ohio State. I mean, he had lived in that world of the spotlight being on him 24/7 and being this national recruit at a time when this stuff was just getting more and more publicized. I mean, it's not like he came to Ohio State and then things ratcheted up for him. I mean, I guess they did to an extent, but like the point I'm trying to make is that he had to live in this world for so long like that without like the right kind of guidance. And so when you're 16, 17, you're in high school and you're starting to deal with some of this stuff, like you're going to bring that with you when you get to Ohio State. And then when you can't do what you need to do at that level, it just makes it, everything just gets exponentially more challenging, I would think.
Okay. The last two questions are, what would have happened if he didn't come? And then what do we think about the reinstatement? Is there anything that we haven't covered that you wanted to cover as it relates to the specific Ohio State recruitment, as it relates to the cast of characters that we have outlined here? I mean, again, you and I have had these conversations ourselves many, many times, and it's why it is very rich. And there is, it is a tragedy in some ways. Now, listen, you know, Terrell's okay. You know, he did just, you know, like he's okay. He made some money.
Yeah.
He's okay.
Yeah.
He's trying to get his records reinstated. I mean, it's not, you know, it's maybe tragedy is the wrong word. Like, it's unfortunate. It should have gone better than it did.
It should. Absolutely. Yes.
And again, the complicating factor, it leads to Urban, like Ohio State's okay. And that's the thing about this. That's always, it's like, I thought there was going to be a cloud over Ohio State, but it turns out Ohio State's fine.
Yeah. Ohio State hired Urban Meyer in like a couple of months, had one dip of a season, and has just been off to the races ever since.
And it certainly didn't end the way that Jim Tressel would have chosen, but I'm not sure how many more years he would have coached. Maybe four, maybe two. I don't think he would have coached another 10 years.
No.
And like,
he referred to that too, didn't he?
Yeah.
Not to cut you off at midpoint there, but he always kind of made a reference to that like he wasn't, if he tried to talk too long-term with Tressel, he kind of shot it down.
Yeah.
Like, I think he knew that there was a shelf life.
And he's certainly, it affects his legacy, but I think for the most part, Ohio State fans love Jim Tressel. You know, I don't think it stained him, you know, that again, Woody ended with the punch, but like Ohio State fans love Woody. Tressel ended with this, but Ohio State fans love Tressel, and he's the president of a university. Like, right. I would say that I think Jim Tressel's okay.
I would agree. Yep.
And so the university's okay, the football program's okay, the coach is okay, and I guess Terrell's okay. But he should be more okay. And so I do think, and then again, now again, DeVere Posey's NFL career, I think absolutely suffered by the games he missed. He's a third round pick. It could have been a higher pick.
Yeah.
It never really works out. He ends up playing in the CFL. Boom Heron does have a decent, you know, little NFL career. Mike Adams has an NFL career. So they're okay, but they miss, you know, Ohio State misses out on what could have been a great year in 2011. And I guess that's the football program's, you know, punishment. That,
yeah.
And then the bowl they miss in 2012. So there is an effect. But like long term, Ohio State football's program's healthy, and I do think the person who got the shortest end of the stick is Terrell Pryor.
As I'm trying to think back on like things that maybe we haven't covered, I think back to that Sugar Bowl game in New Orleans, and just it was an unbelievable game. It was played under the cloud of these guys are going to play this game, and then they're going to sit out for part of next year. And you know, it wasn't for a national championship, and what a disappointment it was. But I think you were there, but on the field. as the game has ended, and I remember Terrell had like messed up his ankle like badly in that game and needed help walking. Like, I don't know how he played the last at least one or two quarters of that game. I mean, he could barely walk. And I remember I think you were with me, because it's just kind of chaos on the field. Like, he was being interviewed on ESPN, like live after the game was over. And I'm like in the background and someone's jabbing me in the ribs and just, it's chaos. But then we did talk to Terrell for like 5 minutes on the field. And he eventually said, like, guys, can I go? I'm in a lot of pain. And he like hobbled to the locker room with like the help of like one or two of his teammates. And it was, I just remember in that moment thinking, okay, so this guy's going to be suspended for next year. He's been through everything that he's been through to get to this point. He's in an incredible amount of pain. He just won that game.
Yeah.
Like, they just won this game. And it gave me a new appreciation in that moment for the toughness that was there and for what he could be as a player and as an athlete. It was just, it all kind of crystallized in my mind in that moment of what he went through to win that game for them. And then that was the end.
Probably a book. Okay. It's not really, this podcast is not really about us. It's not about us.
We're just going to transcribe this podcast and we're going to publish it.
Oh, man. Yeah, you have the 27,000 word file, and then the podcast is my contribution. We'll just smash it together.
Perfect.
Slap our names on it. Okay, we're going to come back and answer those last two questions. What if Terrell Pryor had not come here, and what should happen with the reinstatement? That's next on Buckeye Talk. All right, Doug LaMarie is back with the great Adam Jardy. Make sure you're reading his work at dispatch.com and in the Columbus Dispatch and listening to his Buckeye Extra Basketball podcast. Okay, what if Terrell Pryor had picked Michigan or Penn State in 2008, in that 2008 recruiting class? What's the immediate effect?
The immediate effect is it gives, I keep coming back to Michigan, it gives them that necessary shot in the arm. And I mean, we saw like what that things just never got rolling the way that Rich Rodriguez wanted them to. I think that he would have probably been developed a little bit better because he would have had an actual quarterback's coach with him at Michigan. And so when I think about, had Terrell Pryor gone to Michigan at an era when Ohio State is winning at a historic level against its rival, I think he could have been pretty good there. And I think that then that affects the next Michigan recruiting class.
Yeah.
The next Michigan, you start building on that and suddenly, you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously there were flaws there and it didn't work out for Rich Rod for a number of reasons at Michigan, but that could have, we talked about the Ohio State trying to make Terrell is like to get them over that hump, you know, but they had all these really good players and then you step out of your comfort zone, maybe you get this one guy. The impact that could have had at Michigan, I think could have been significant.
So Rich Rod is at West Virginia in 2007. While the Ohio State recruited the coaches are sending five coaches to a Terrell Pryor High School game, Rich Rodriguez is making a national title run at West Virginia.
Yeah.
And they were set up to play for the national title once Ohio State lost to Illinois, except then they screwed it up and that's how Ohio State, four things had to happen and they all happened and they back in to the national title game against LSU. But I think people thought, because he was recruiting Terrell Pryor while he was at West Virginia.
Yes.
And then I don't know that Michigan knew it for sure, but I think people thought, oh, like Michigan's going to hire Rich Rodriguez. They're going to get Terrell Pryor and away they go.
Right.
And that's like the new era of Michigan football. The Penn State stuff, I mean, Joe Pa is just older. I just don't think he connected with Terrell the way he connected with the dad. But I think just like the recruiting win itself.
Yes, yes. That, and this has to be part of Terrell's legacy. Whatever we talk about on the field, I mean, there is a significant portion of any of these fan bases that they want to win the recruiting battle as much as they want to win the national championship.
Yeah.
And I keep coming back to the recruiting impact of not landing Terrell would have been significant because you would have Todd Beckman for the next year.
So 2008, then Terrell's not here, but it's like, oh, we're just going to play the guy who led us to the national title game last year. We're okay.
Right, right. And then where does it go from there? I mean, you get Braxton Miller eventually, but...
So here's the guy that I'm pretty sure they would have gotten.
That's this. Okay, I want to hear this.
So I think they get Taj Boyd.
Yes.
In 2009.
Yes.
And again, to plug the book, there's a chapter on Kenny Guyton in the recruiting book because they wind up in the class of 2009, they wind up with Kenny Guyton. And listen, I talked to Jim, everyone knew it then, but I talked to Jim Tressel about it again for the book about the Kenny Guyton recruitment. They can't get anybody to come because everybody's like, well, Terrell Pryor is starting as a freshman. I'm not going to come and sit behind him. Taj Boyd, Troy Smith is his hero. He loves Troy Smith. He likes Ohio State, but he's not going to come and be blocked by Terrell Pryor.
Taj Boyd's favorite player growing up was Troy Smith. He grew up wanting to play for Ohio State. He thought he was going to go to Ohio State. I'm just looking through my quote file for Taj Boyd.
So,
that was a real thing. That was a real chance.
And then honestly, I mean, this is really a pretty good Buckeye fly effect. Taj Boyd goes to Clemson and helps start Clemson being Clemson.
Yes.
Because then Taj Boyd, we're all talking to him at the 2013 Orange Bowl when he's a fifth-year senior. And by the way, he went to Clemson to play right away and like didn't play for 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's like that didn't work either. It's like, well, but they make the sell job. They get him. And then he's the first peg that then leads to Deshaun Watson that then leads to Trevor Lawrence. So when it comes to like a pure football standpoint, Taj Boyd's not as naturally gifted as Terrell Pryor. Taj Boyd wound up being a very good college quarterback.
He did have an ACL that I think knocked him out for the first year. So I think that was part of it. I'm just going back through the different things that I wrote about him because that was like a big thing. And it was he had Ohio State, Oregon, and Clemson as his finalists. And he had initially committed to West Virginia to play for Rich Rod.
Okay.
But then decommitted like early on in the process and in reopening things.
So like if Terrell Pryor goes to Michigan, maybe Clemson doesn't become Clemson because Taj Boyd goes to Ohio State. But it's one of those things. And I think the point is, listen, so in the 2009 class, they don't get Taj Boyd. They get desperate. They think they're going to get Austin Boucher, who they've had on the back burner behind Boyd. Austin Boucher is committed to Miami of Ohio. They figure we'll flip him once Boyd goes somewhere else. They go to flip Austin Boucher. His brother's going to Miami of Ohio, and he's kind of like, well, you guys are late on me. Austin Boucher says, give me 24 hours, says thanks, but no thanks. And they're like, we don't have a quarterback. And they just say, like, who are the quarterbacks who are in the towns where our assistants happen to be today?
Yes.
And John Peterson is in Houston, Texas, and they look on the list of uncommitted quarterbacks because Jim Tressel doesn't really want to do that to somebody else, doesn't want to steal somebody's quarterback. And John Peterson shows up at Kenny Guyton's high school in a trench coat. Kenny Guyton is homesick. They call him and say, there's a guy here in a trench coat from Ohio State. You need to get here. And that's how Kenny Guyton becomes Kenny Guyton. And that's why when I was asked to do this recruiting book, the number one guy that I knew I was going to do a chapter on was Kenny Guyton.
Yes.
So I have much more detail. Everyone knows that story, but I think I talked to like a million people about that recruitment. So, but the main point is, Adam, I think whenever you're a program like Ohio State, I do think sometimes there are the guys who make a difference. Maybe Quinn Ewers is going to be that. Maybe he's the guy that's going to get Ohio State over the top. Ohio State's already great. Maybe they're going to win two national titles with Quinn Ewers. Ohio State did think that with Terrell Pryor. Yes. We're great. Mm-hmm. They're great.
Yep.
But he's going to get us over the top. But if you don't get that guy, you're still going to get somebody good. So that is the hard thing of when you're deciding, like, do we stretch and go for this guy? You can feel desperate in the moment, but it's not like they're going to be playing a two-star quarterback. They're just going to get somebody great in the next class, and I think they would have gotten Taj Boyd.
They probably would have. That's a great point. The only counter to that is Joe Bauserman. Sometimes you end up with a season where you have you think you're going to get the next guy, you get the next guy, and you probably are. And I recognize that recruiting has changed even since Joe Bauserman ended up at Ohio State. But sometimes when you don't get that guy or you don't get the next guy, that's how you end up with a guy who was a minor league pitcher for a couple of years.
Well, but that's true. But they also, if the stuff hadn't happened with Terrell, Terrell would have been a senior in 2011 while Braxton Miller was a freshman.
Which was the plan.
There would have been a fairly seamless handoff from a uniquely gifted quarterback to another in a different way, uniquely gifted quarterback.
Right.
And so it does get jammed up because of it. But like they could have handed off from Taj Boyd to Braxton Miller. And then again, there are bumps. And Ohio State's had some weird quarterback stuff happen over the years. You know, they thought there was going to be Justin Zwick and it winds up being Troy Smith. So they have had that a couple times. So you can't take it for granted.
Right.
But on the other hand, like I think they would have been okay. And so then I don't really want to get into, I mean, like Urban Meyer created a new era of Ohio State football. But like generally, you know, it ends Tressel's career. If they don't get Urban, that's the thing. It's like, if they don't get Urban,
well, right.
Who knows where they would be? Because, again, we think Ohio State's indestructible. You're one bad hire away from falling off a cliff, as every major program has found out. So if you don't get Urban, then everyone's going to view this differently. But the idea, I guess in the end, it's like, we thought, the whole point of this podcast is, we thought there was a chance when they got Terrell Pryor that it was going to lead to something bad.
Yes.
And we were right. So if we thought that, Ohio State had to have some inkling, and they did it anyway. Was that the right move? Because this player, where the program was, you've got... And listen, by the way, I'm assuming that there are like some schools in the SEC where they have like 10 recruitments like this a year. And it was just like, this was an outlier at that time from the way we understood it of how, you know, the recruitment of Bryant Browning went, you know what I mean? Or like the recruitment of James Laurinaitis or like that, or Malcolm Jenkins or like AJ Hawk, like great players.
Right.
We just hadn't really quite seen this. So the question is, you don't know what's going to happen after the fact, but in that moment, did Jim Tressel do the right thing saying, we're going to get this guy?
I can make a very strong yes and a very strong no. And my no is just simply that they did not win a national championship. Because that was, I mean, that was talked about on the day that these guys all signed. Like, yep. We're going to win multiple national championships. And that was the clear expectation. That's where this class, led by Terrell Pryor, was headed. They were going to win a national championship, and they didn't. So you can very clearly say no. It was not worth it. They did not win the national championship. I spent so much time in the recruiting world that I think that there are underlying things that are impossible to... Things played out a certain way. It's impossible to predict exactly what would have happened in a different realm. But I think that losing the recruitment of Terrell Pryor to one of your rivals, I think the negative repercussions of that make it to where you had to get him. Because they were in so deep, and because I guess we can't say specifically how he would have turned out at Michigan or how he would have turned out at Penn State, but because if he goes to Michigan and he's a bust at Michigan, then okay, well, hey, yeah, we didn't get him, but look what Michigan did. They took the number one recruit in the country and threw him in the trash. He was garbage there. Then you can use that. But I find it hard to think that he would have been a bust.
Right.
So I think that if Ohio State loses Terrell Pryor, it is such a positive boon for one of those other programs that I think that starts to cast a little bit of a shadow on Ohio State's recruitment. Because also, one thing that we haven't talked about on here is the recruiting class the year before for Ohio State was fairly nondescript. Mm. I mean, there was not much in that 07 recruiting class. And you ended up having some really good players come out of it. Dane Sanzenbacher was in that class. And like he was a very underrated recruit. But they didn't move the needle with that 07 recruiting class. And so, yes, you brought in Michael Brewster was a five-star, and DeVere Posey was a five-star, and J.B. Shugarts was a five-star. And you go down that list, there was a lot of talent in this recruiting class. But without Pryor, it would have been like, okay, you're coming off. You just lost a national championship game. You lost another national championship game. You have this so-so recruiting class in 2007. And now you've got this really good recruiting class, but you couldn't finish it. And not only could you not finish it, but that guy went to Michigan. And I think that world where that happens – I think it could be very different for Ohio State in a very short period of time. And so I think that ultimately, because of all that, I think you needed him. I think you had to land Terrell Pryor.
It would have been the third loss.
Yes,
National title game, lose out on the number one recruit in the country.
To your number one rival.
Yes.
Yes. I think that the blowback at that point, the narrative around Ohio State, and I agree with you. I hate the word narrative. But the national perception, maybe we can say, of Ohio State would be they won that championship with Maurice Claret. We are almost a decade removed from that. And where is this program headed?
That's just where they would have been. Fine.
They're fine.
But they can't get over the top.
Yes.
If you could do it over, would you want Terrell Pryor to come to Ohio State? The tech subscribers, 80% yes, great player, tough circumstance, but he's worth it. 13% don't know, you can't change the past, Doug. 8% no, get a different quarterback. Maybe he's not quite as good, but he'll avoid the issues. So that's everybody taking, like, it's worth it,
yep.
Right? And I do think the point, I had not, this is why you're here, I had not thought of it in terms of the boost it would have given Penn State or Michigan, and that there's a perception to the recruiting that even though it, like, kind of didn't work out. Listen, there's a lot of great football play. Listen, the Iowa game where he scrambles on 4th and 10 and makes a crazy play. The Wisconsin win,
yep,
where they run the option with him and Beanie at Wisconsin. He keeps the ball, right, and yep, runs it in, and it's like, holy moly. Now, listen, they didn't know, like, in 08, they tried that pistol. We all wrote, oh my God, if you think people write about the bullet now.
The pistol.
The pistol. We thought it was like landing a man on the moon. It was like, what? It's a short shotgun? What does that mean? Because they had a downhill classic Big Ten Ohio State running back in Beanie Wells, who was about to be a first-round pick, and a dual-threat quarterback who you had to keep as a run option,
yeah,
and they didn't really fit together. And they had to figure it out on the fly, but they went to Wisconsin and won with it. And Clay Holt crawled across a table to get an interview with Terrell Pryor, which I'll never forget. So they had, like, Terrell Pryor gave Ohio State fans unbelievable moments, yes, unbelievable excitement, unbelievable individual efforts, right? And he was a great player, and we can get to the Tattoo 5 stuff about reinstatement. And that's what part of it is. I think part of what Terrell's asking, and it's not even, you don't have to infer it, they say it in the thing. And the tweet that Terrell put out, they just want to be able to be thought of without this hanging over them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we can say, fans can say, I think a lot of fans have, I don't even know if forgiven is the right word. Not all of them. There are still some people who are mad. And frankly, if you're one of those people who's still mad at Terrell, I don't think it would be terrible if this discussion today helped you maybe rethink about, you know, a teenager who was put, like, in a very difficult circumstance and tried to do his best and made some mistakes, but you know what? Like, maybe we could 10 years later forgive him, right?
Right.
Should the records of the Tattoo 5 be reinstated? Again, our tech subscribers, if you want to vote and stuff like this, try a 14-day free trial at 614-350-3315. 80% yes, reinstate it. 12.5% no. 7.5% I can't decide. I think they suffered. His NFL career suffered. Jim Tressel's career suffered. The program suffered for what happened in 2011 and the bowl ban in 2012. I think you could give the records back.
I agree. And I've seen it pointed out that what they did then, even with the new working rules that we have right now, would still be against the rules.
Yes.
However, I find it very hard to believe that they would have done any, they, like, okay, so they traded their jerseys and things for, or you know, for tattoos and stuff. Well, in this current world, they would have just said, hey, give me a tattoo and I'll sign autographs here. I'll do, like, whatever. They would have been some way that would have been above board, and there wouldn't have been a problem in the first place.
And they would have been, they could have made money in a million different ways and then just paid for their tattoos or that paid too, for, you know, like, yes, they just would have had money,
yeah,
that and, they didn't have.
And again, the story that I told earlier about talking to Terrell on the field inside the Superdome when his ankle is, like, broken, basically, and he just gutted it out and won that game that doesn't even count anymore. Like, those things happened. Those guys put their bodies out there and did these things. And for us to sort of sanctimoniously sit back here and say, yeah, you broke this rule, and so that doesn't count. Like, I hate vacating rules anyway, or vacating, yes, records anyway. It's dumb. It makes our lives more difficult. You have to pretend that something that we all watched didn't happen. You know, I'm sure Arkansas didn't vacate its portion of the game. I mean, they still count that as a win, even if Ohio, or as a, you know, they count their individual stats.
Yeah.
I think that it's fair to say those guys did what they did for Ohio State. Yes, they broke rules, but the rules have changed, and they're the ones that made those sacrifices for Ohio State. So yeah, I think they should get their records back.
Ohio State says it's an NCAA issue. It's not Ohio State's jurisdiction to just, like, unilaterally say we're putting the records back in the record book. Frankly, if they just did it, I don't know what the NCAA would do.
Correct.
Right? The NCAA, yeah, has basically given up on amateurism and is like, oh, yeah, it was the thing that we, like, tore programs down for. And now we're like, eh, whatever. Yeah. So I think we will get to a point where there will be a blanket thing that if it's something that people accepted outside benefits, not the coach paying you, because that's still not allowed.
Right.
If you accepted outside benefits, we're reinstating everybody. And that's Fab Five, that's Reggie Bush, yep, that's Tattoo Five, whatever. I think they will get to that point. And I think it's okay for people to have a little bit of grace with this, because it's not like you're undoing the penalty. This is like a minor part of the penalty. It's the only penalty that can be undone.
Yes.
You can't give Terrell Pryor his season back. You can't give Jim Tressel his job back. And maybe you think they shouldn't get that back. Right.
But whether you do or don't, you can't go back in time. This is the only thing you can do now. And like, what is the point? What are you proving by keeping the records out?
Yes, exactly. I mean, you're holding on to something that you should just let go. I mean, there's nothing. How do I say this? It doesn't solve anything. It doesn't accomplish anything by saying that, oh, Terrell Pryor's not the all-time leading whatever in the record books. Like, all you're doing is punishment for the sake of punishment. I mean, there's no gain to come out of that.
And I can remember, because he was then banned from campus.
Right.
And I can remember when the Browns, several years ago, played an exhibition game at Ohio Stadium, and we were like, is he allowed to be here?
Right.
That was like a story that we did. Uh-huh. I did.
Yep.
It's like, hey, he's an NFL player. His team is playing an exhibition game in your stadium. Are you going to continue to ban him from it?
Right.
And it's like, oh my God, like he did. He has paid the price. So I think if you think he should have been able to have name, image, and likeness, then the rules have changed. He didn't do anything wrong. Then you think reinstate the records. If you think he broke the rules, dude, you broke the rules. You knew the rules and you broke them. I still think you should want to give his records back. Have a little grace.
Yeah, we're not saying, okay, because of X, Y, and Z, he made this much less money when he actually got to the NFL. So therefore, he's owed, like, you know, the back pay or like,
right.
Like we're not even saying, okay, when he was at Ohio State as this amazing, you know, recruit and national name, he would have made all this money. He's due this money. We're not saying any of that. Give him the records. He was on the field putting his body out there. And we saw firsthand, you know, the physical toll that took. Yeah, there's no reason that he shouldn't have those records.
It's unfortunate. There are two great quarterbacks in Ohio State history whose reputations are affected by off-field things that affect how you view them. One is Art Schleister.
Yep.
And now, listen, what Art Schleister, I'm only bringing this up in context of, like, when you see their name or whatever, when you hear their name, you can't just enjoy them as a football player and only think of that.
Correct.
But Art Schleister hurt people. He took money from people.
Yeah.
He's been in prison. Like, that is a far different situation from Terrell, which is my point, which is like, I think it would be fair for when Ohio State football fans, when they look at Terrell Pryor and they see his name in the record book, to just enjoy it, to just think about the 4th-and-10 run against Iowa, to think about the game-winning run against Wisconsin, to think about the pass to Jake Ballard against Oregon in the Rose Bowl, to think about him putting his body on the line in the Sugar Bowl against Arkansas, to think about the times he beat Michigan, right? Like, I think that's what you should be able to do. And I think the only way you can help that process along, you can't wipe people's memories, but I think reinstating the records is both a tangible thing, because he'll be in the record books.
Right.
And it is both the intangible, it's a nod. That's like, you know what? Because listen, Tressel's been back.
That was the point I was just about to make, that yes, Jim Tressel has been carried off the field on the shoulders of his players since he was fired and all this went down. I mean, if Jim Tressel is allowed back in Ohio Stadium, Terrell Pryor should be. I don't see how you can argue one and not the other, or be okay with one and not the other.
And so, and this would be a way that you could acknowledge that.
Correct.
And you could then, I mean, you know, maybe you could think about something like a 15-year anniversary in 2024 of the Rose Bowl champion team.
Yes, exactly.
And Terrell Pryor and Devere Posey and Mike Adams and Solomon Thomas and Dan Heron can come back with pride,
uh-huh,
with nothing hanging over them, and fully embrace what it is to be a Buckeye. And I think the fact that they're asking for this, because listen, other people are saying this. As soon as the name, image, and likeness stuff came up, people were saying, hey, what about them?
Yeah.
But they're not, it's not just that. They are asking.
Yeah. This matters to them.
It matters.
It's important. And if you want to continue to be mad at them, you're mad at people who just want to be acknowledged for the fact that they care. They it meant something to them to do these things at Ohio State. If that didn't mean anything, they wouldn't ask.
Right.
This would not matter to them if being a Buckeye wasn't part of who they are, if that wasn't part of what they care about. And if it matters that much to them, why would you not accept that as a fan? I don't understand that.
And I really do think in the end, it's not about whether you think it was okay what they did or wasn't okay. This is where we are now.
Yeah.
Let's let them back.
Yeah.
And so, and I do think it'll happen. I'll be curious
how much Ohio State publicly or privately pushes for it. I mean, because when Ohio State wants something, they have a lot of power in the NCAA.
Right.
So if USC and Michigan and Ohio State behind the scenes say to the NCAA, listen, like, we can't do it. We're going to put it on your plate, but like, we've got your back. Do this and do it for everybody.
Right.
And then when you do it, we'll all put out things and say, what a magnanimous gesture by the NCAA. You'll get a little bit of goodwill. Let's do this. I think if Ohio State, Michigan, USC, and other schools like it, Duke, Miami, whatever, if they do that, I think it'll have an impact.
Right.
And I'll be curious to see. Because publicly, I think Ohio State didn't follow up the Terrell Pryor tweet and say, yeah, we agree.
Correct.
Like when I texted them, it's like their response was, well, you're still not allowed to sell memorabilia under Ohio State's NIL rules, and it's an NCAA issue, which is not quite, yeah, bring our guys back. But I wonder what they'll do privately.
Yeah.
So book or no?
I'm in.
All right. And it's one of those things, we would have to talk to Terrell. And we would have to talk to those other people in town, and we would have to talk to Tressel. And the thing that I've always lived in fear of with anything, but listen, there's not a lot of controversial stuff in the recruiting book I did. And this is what writing a book is much more stressful in a lot of ways than I imagined. It was easier in some ways and harder in some ways. But I think the worst case scenario is like your book comes out and like a week after it comes out, it's like, oh, it's wrong.
Yeah. That was our fear. That's why it didn't happen, because we were waiting for that to happen.
So like the idea of, well, this is what happened. This is the true story of how Terrell Pryor wound up at Ohio State. And then like, oh no. But I wonder if we could get to it now. And, you know, again, we don't know what happened. I don't know if it's all pretty. I don't know for sure. I think it's interesting. I think it's complicated. I think it's strategic.
Yep.
I think it's clever by Ohio State. I think they put a lot of work into it. I think if you could talk to Tom Bradley and Rich Rodriguez and people like that about their view of it, how Ohio State wound up winning it, I'd be really curious about it. But I think in the end, in the middle of it all, was a teenager in a tough spot with great talent who I don't think to say he was like taken advantage of is quite the right thing.
Right.
But in the end, it's about the adults in the room and it's not on him. And he was in a really tough spot, and he wound up playing some great football.
Yeah, yeah, and physically, as I've mentioned a few times, physically paid the toll for that.
Yes.
And that needs to always sort of be part of the record, I think.
All right. That is our What If Terrell Pryor Had Not Come to Ohio State Buckeye Fly Effect. I'll be curious to see what the reaction is to this. Because it is possibly the most, and one of it's because we're really good friends, but one of it is one of the most, like, shooting the bull kind of thing we've ever done on here. And I don't think we said anything untoward.
No.
Because I think in the end, people will find out some of the ins and outs, but we don't know everything
right
that went down. And it's one of those things, if you don't think there are 100 recruitments like this around the country, maybe not 100, at least 10 every year that are like this in basketball and football, and we've seen this stuff, this is life in the big city.
Yeah.
And the structure, the way the NCAA does things, you force it to be like this. And if you want to be great, I mean, like, you know, sometimes it's complicated.
Right.
And guess what? Ohio State is great at football. So every now and then it gets complicated.
Right.
Adam Jardy, a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
All right. We'll just figure something else out. Adam really likes Star Wars. Maybe we'll do that next on a Buckeye Talk. What if Hayden Christensen had not been cast as young Darth Vader?
Oh,
what
would have happened? How much time did this one go?
Yeah. That was an hour and a half. We would go 4 hours on that one. All right. Thanks to our good friend Adam Jardy of the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks to you guys for listening. Coming Monday, we will have our picks. Steven, Nathan, me, our picks for the Big Ten football standings. That'll be on the Monday podcast. For now, for Adam Jardy, I'm Doug LaMaurice, and that was Buckeye Talk.